Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13. Dhritarashtra quits home. Text 14. Kanchet kalam atavatsit sat krito devavat sukham bratur jeshtasya shreyas krit sarvesha Sukham Avahan. Kanchit kalam atavatsit Satkrito deva vatsukam Ratur jetasya shretas shreyas kret Sarvesham sukham avahan Kanchit kalam atavatsit Satkrito deva vatsukam Bratur jetasya shreyas kret Sarvesham sukham avahan Kanchit kalam atavatsit Satkrito deva vatsukam Bratur jeshtasya shreyas kret Sarvesham sukham avahan
Kanchit kalam atavatsit
For a few days.
Kalam.
Time. Avatsit.
Resided.
Satkrita. Being well treated. Devavat.
Just like a godly personality.
Sukham. Amenities. Bratu.
Of the brother.
Jeshtasya.
Of the elder.
Shreya Kret.
For doing good to him.
Sarvesham.
All others.
Sukham.
Happiness.
Avahan.
Made it possible.
Translation. Thus, Mahatma Vidura, being treated just like a godly person by his kinsmen, remained there for a certain period just to rectify the mentality of his elder brother, and in this way bring happiness to all the others. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Saintly persons like Vidura must be treated as well as a denizen from heaven. In those days, denizens of heavenly planets used to visit homes like that of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and sometimes persons like Arjuna and others used to visit higher planets. Narada is a spaceman who can travel unrestrictedly, not only within the material universes, but also in the spiritual universes. Even Narada used to visit the palace of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and what to speak of other celestial demigods. It is only the spiritual culture of the people concerned that makes interplanetary travel possible, even in the present body. Maharaj Yudhisthira therefore received Vidura in the manner of reception offered to the demigods. Mahatma Vidura had already adopted the renounced order of life, and therefore he did not return to his paternal palace to enjoy some material comforts. He accepted out of his own mercy what was offered to him by Maharaj Yudhisthira, but the purpose of living in the palace was to deliver his elder brother Dhritarashtra, who was too much materially attached. Dhritarashtra lost all his state and descendants in the fight with Maharaj Yudhisthira, and still, due to his sense of helplessness, he did not feel ashamed to accept the charity and hospitality of Maharaj Yudhisthira. On the part of Maharaj Yudhisthira, it was quite in order to maintain his uncle in a befitting manner, but acceptance of such magnanimous hospitality by Dhritarashtra was not at all desirable. He accepted it because he thought that there was no alternative. Vidura particularly came to enlighten Dhritarashtra and to give him a lift to the higher status of spiritual cognition. It is the duty of enlightened souls to deliver the fallen ones, and Vidura came for that reason. But talks of spiritual enlightenment are so refreshing that while instructing Dhritarashtra, Vidura attracted the attention of all the members of the family, and all of them took pleasure in hearing him patiently. That is the way of spiritual realization. The message should be heard attentively, and if spoken by a realized soul, it will act on the dormant heart of the conditioned soul. And by continuously hearing, one can attain the perfect stage of self-realization. Kanchit kala matavatsit satkrito devavatsukam bratur jeshtasya shreyas krit sarvisham sukam avaham. Thus Mahatma Vidura, being treated just like a godly person by his kinsmen, remained there for a certain period just to rectify the mentality of his eldest brother and in this way bring happiness to all the others. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vastyajyade Jatarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasani Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yes, so Vidura has returned to his, well, you could say paternal home, not exactly that. But the home of the main father. His father, of course, was Vyasadeva. So he's come home, and he is, as described here, he was received extremely nicely, Devavat. Devavat. Deva, of course, means demigod or even the Lord himself, and vat means like. Yeah, so Devavat, just like a demigod. He was received and treated. And this is being described here by Srila Prabhupada as really very appropriate and suitable. Advanced devotees should be saintly people, like Vidura, should be treated as well as a denizen from heaven, or even better, really, if they're very great elevated devotees, means that in consciousness they're on a higher level than a typical demigod who may be somewhat materially influenced. So it's really suitable, and it's necessary that when one receives such an advanced devotee like Mahatma Vidura, that he should be received as nicely as possible, practically. Yes. And this is just the way it should be. This is not like some special, special thing. Actually, any devotee should be received very nicely. And particularly the very advanced devotees should be received extremely nicely. And this is part of Vaishnav culture. Vaishnav culture is a very respectful culture. Very respectful culture. In other, even spiritual or religious cultures, this type of treatment for an advanced person is not really is not done, is not appreciated, and sometimes they say that why treat an ordinary person like God or like some in a very, very special way. They feel this is inappropriate. And even very, very special spiritual persons should just be treated in some nonchalant type of way. Yes. So, but, and therefore, for example, such people, when they see devotees offering obeisances to the spiritual master, and what to speak of them offering obeisances just to each other, these types of people, they really think this is wrong, and it's some sort of like excessively subservient type of consciousness, almost like a slave mentality. And that, you know, on one hand they think that the person who's offering the respect, he can't really feel that sort of respect. But just like a slave, who obviously doesn't really respect his master, but just is forced to interact in certain special ways, just like some sort of slave who's just doing it just because and for no substantial personal reason. So they think, yes, this is just some sort of defective, improper type of activity. But for the devotees understand that what to speak of the very advanced devotees like Vidura, but even the ordinary devotees, so to speak, by the relative standards of the devotee community, even the regular devotees are special and should be treated in special ways. Lord Chaitanya, when he was in Jagannath Puri, all or so many of the devotees would come every year for the Rath Yatra and to spend the rainy season there. in the company of Lord Chaitanya, usually for 4 months, 3 to 4 months. So when all the devotees would come, they of course would be very happy to meet Lord Chaitanya. And one time, as the devotees were traveling, in a group headed by Shivananda Sen, one dog sort of tagged along. And Shivananda Sen was feeding the dog. And, you know, many animals, they, if you just feed them, they become attached to you, and yes, you know, they'll stick with you if you just feed them. And so this dog did that. But just as they were about to arrive in Jagannath Puri, Shivananda Sen became very busy one day and couldn't feed the dog for the whole day. And the dog became disappointed, and just being an animal and not understanding that, yes, you know, he's very busy, I should tolerate, surely he'll come after some time. But just being an animal, the dog became hungry and uncomfortable, and so he went looking for food. And somehow, by the arrangement of the Lord, he found Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri, which they were just approaching Jagannath Puri. And Lord Chaitanya started feeding him. And when Shivananda Sen and the devotees arrived and they went first to meet Lord Chaitanya, there was the dog. And Lord Chaitanya was throwing him pieces of coconut, and the dog was catching them in his mouth. And Lord Chaitanya was saying, "Chant Krishna, Krishna." And the dog, in dog language, was chanting Krishna, Krishna. And Shivananda Sen, here we're talking about offering respect. What to speak of offering respect to some great devotee like Mahatma Vidura? What to speak of offering respect even to the regular devotees? Shivananda Sen went up to that dog and offered obeisances in the mood that I offended you by not feeding you, but on the other hand, you've got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So this is just such an intrinsic, natural part of the whole culture of Krishna consciousness, that one becomes respectful. And even Prabhupada would say sometimes that the devotee is respectful even towards the ant. What to speak of the dog who's sort of, you know, attached to the devotees and involved with the devotees. But even just some ant, the devotee will not harm an ant and even often offer respect even to an ant. So this is not a symptom of some slave mentality, of some tamasic sort of misconceived mentality. This is natural. Such feelings arise in the hearts of devotees in very natural ways, just as part and parcel of the purification and the development of consciousness that comes naturally as the devotee progresses. That's all. It's not that the devotee has to take lessons in offering respects or being respectful. some lessons in etiquette in that sense. The natural feeling, inclination, desire to appreciate or to respect the devotees, and the natural appreciation of the devotees, which is based on seeing them for what they are and seeing their qualities and understanding this is very nice. So the devotees naturally feel impelled to offer respects and offer obeisances. So to any devotee, we were saying Lord Chaitanya, when he was there in Jagannath Puri, he was approached by a group of devotees from a place called Kulina Gram is a couple of hours drive to the west, more or less, across the Ganges, maybe even 3 hours, but it's something like that, from Mayapur. You cross the Ganges and you go west, and you come to this place called Kulina. So there were devotees headed by a great devotee associate of Lord Chaitanya called Gunaraj Khan, and if I remember correctly, his son was Satyaraj Khan, and there was a whole group of them from that place, and they would come to see Lord Chaitanya every year. So one year the whole group met with Lord Chaitanya and asked Lord Chaitanya, how can we recognize a devotee? How do we recognize a Vaishnava? Meaning symptoms in the person, in their character and in their life. And Lord Chaitanya answered that that person who chants the name of Krishna one time in his life is the best of the common people. In other words, he's sort of included amongst the common people, but he is the best, the very best. Someone who's chanted the name of Krishna one time in his or her life. That's very significant. The next year they came and asked the same question, and Lord Chaitanya answered that that person who is chanting the name of Krishna constantly is the best of the devotees. And then the following year, third year in a row, the same group came and asked exactly the same question, and Lord Chaitanya answered that that person who, when you just see them, you become inspired to chant the names of Krishna, that person is the best of the best of the devotees. But in terms of this discussion here, Lord Chaitanya made that point the first time, that that person who chants the name of Krishna one time, is the best of the common people, and it means those who are not really devotees and who are not really practicing or focused like that in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So in other words, that person is worthy of some respect. Even that person who's chanted the name of Krishna only one time is worthy of recognition, appreciation, and at least some respect. And what to speak of those devotees who are constantly chanting, constantly engaged, regularly engaged in the process of Krishna consciousness. They're the best. They're very, very special. So Krishna consciousness is a process of, or a culture of respect, natural respect, not just learnt respect. Of course, in certain respects we need to learn Vaishnava etiquette, because in many cases, practically any idea of etiquette is, you know, if not unknown, maybe unknown in some cases, but if not unknown, at least something which is not really there in the hearts of so many people. So therefore, as devotees, as you're probably aware, we have seminars on Vaishnava etiquette. Yes. So we can learn how to treat people, how not to treat people, and how to treat certain people, but others not in that way, and then others in some other different way also, and so on like that. You know, there's certain complexities to the subject which we need to learn, because in many ways it's very foreign to us in terms of our upbringing. So, but when a devotee becomes spiritually advanced, or as a devotee gradually progresses spiritually, then in very natural ways, without having to be told, treat this person like this, treat this person like that, in very natural ways, the devotee becomes respectful. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev, the Pandava brothers, being extremely advanced, and understanding very clearly the position of Mahatma Vidura, then when he arrived, they treated him Devavat, just like a god, or just like God. And it was very natural for them, just as part of their natural culture, how they just felt. Yes, so that's very nice. And then Prabhupada goes on to make interesting point that that actually, you know, Devavat, literally like a demigod, sometimes the demigods would visit. Sometimes they would actually visit. Narada Muni visited on some occasions. He's considered a demigod. He's the sage amongst the demigods, Narada Muni. So he would visit sometimes. Sometimes he would visit the demigods in the higher planets. Sometimes he'd visit Maharaj Yudhisthira. Sometimes he'd visit Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Oh yes. He would move around extremely freely. And Prabhupada makes the point, sometimes a person like Arjuna would visit a higher planet. Prabhupada makes the point that it is only the spiritual culture of the people concerned that makes interplanetary travel possible, even in the present body. Devotees. So, well, Prabhupada wrote that book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. And he was serious. He's not being facetious or joking, not being light-hearted. Easy Journey to Other Planets. That the point, or the question, or the necessity as far as visiting other planets is not what sort of rocket ship you have and, you know, how fast it can travel, and whether you can have enough food to last through the journey, and all those sorts of considerations. The consideration is your spiritual culture. And Narada Muni particularly, of those mentioned here, Narada Muni particularly, as we said, he is just traveling regularly. Prabhupada refers to him here as a spaceman who can travel unrestrictedly. Even in the spiritual realms, and what to speak of the material realms. So Narada Muni, when he's traveling, he just plays his veena and travels on the sound of his veena. And it's very quick. It doesn't take him light years, or even months, or even days. He just goes zip from one planet to another, and he doesn't have to take a whole stock of foodstuffs to keep him going for the trip and all that. He just travels very quickly because it's only a question of consciousness. That's all. And we see in the Bhagavatam there are so many descriptions of demigods, Narada Muni also, and other demigods coming and visiting this planet. Lord Brahma came on a number of occasions. Lord Indra came, even during the Govardhan, the Abhishek of Lord Krishna at the end of the Govardhan Leela. Everybody came. Lord Shiva came, and all the major demigods, all the great sages, and many other personalities came, because they have the consciousness. And therefore they were able just to come, just like that. You may have heard the story, I don't know. But in Navadweep, there's a place called Hansa Vahan. Hansa means swan. Vahan means carrier or vehicle. Hansa Vahan, the pastime is that Shukadev or Suta Goswami in Navadweep, in a particular part of Navadweep which is known as Naimisharanya, he had just started reciting the Gaura Bhagavat, the Bhagavatam of Lord Chaitanya. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the Bhagavatam of Lord Krishna. There's also a Gaura Bhagavat, a Bhagavatam of Lord Chaitanya. So there in Navadweep, at that place, Suta Goswami, accompanied by many other devotees and transcendental personalities, he was starting that recitation. And Lord Shiva in Kailash, he heard about this, and he thought, phew, I got to get there. I got to hear the nectar. I just want to hear the nectar. So his carrier is Nandi the bull. And bulls are not famous for moving very quickly. In 1976, I went with one other devotee. We took a buffalo cart from Vrindavan to Radhakund. It took the whole day. Oh, it took the whole day. So buffaloes, bulls, same sort of idea. They're not known for traveling fast. So Lord Shiva was in anxiety. I'm not going to get there in time. I'm going to miss so much. So he asked Lord Brahma, can I borrow your... They say Hansa Duta, his swan carrier. And Lord Brahma loaned him his swan, and Lord Shiva came flying in to Navadweep. And so now there's a temple with a deity, and the deity is a swan, and on the back is Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva is lying down, prone on his back, completely flat. and there's various other demigods and sages behind him on the swan, and they're all lying flat because that swan went so fast they just couldn't stay upright. That's Hansavaha. So such travel, so they came from Kailash all the way. It's a long way, you know, interplanetary travel. But they came in no time. Yes, because it's a higher technology. You could use the term technology. It's a much higher technology. Yes. So, yes, then, interesting point. Vidura, he had been brought up in the same palace. For many years he'd lived there until his sort of middle age, actually. Maybe like his 40s or something like that. Or perhaps even a little older. He had lived in the very palace in Hastinapur, which he's just visiting right now. But he had renounced it. He had renounced it. Actually, he was thrown out. But he was happy about that, because then he was able to take up the life of a renunciate and just travel around, visit holy places, preach, associate with the devotees, and this very wonderful way of life. So now he's coming back, and he's not coming back in the mood that, oh, this is my old home, this is where I did this, this is where I did that, it's so comfortable, let me sit down and relax. Not at all. He came to preach to his brother, his older brother Dhritarashtra, who was also brought up in the same palace. They were together for years, for many years. Actually, probably Vidura was probably at least 50 at the time he was kicked out, because he was kicked out by Duryodhana, the son of his brother, the son of Dhritarashtra. So now it's interesting to contrast Vidura and Dhritarashtra, that Vidura, when he got kicked out, he welcomed it as an opportunity to just simplify his life, focus on the Lord without distraction from all the royal affairs and all palace affairs and all that. He welcomed it. Dhritarashtra, you could say, he also got kicked out, in the sense that he and his followers, they were living, he was living as the king, and his chief son Duryodhana was living as the crown prince in the very same palace. Then there was the big battle, the battle of Kurukshetra, and they lost everything, and all of his sons were killed, and it was just him, one, Dhritarashtra, who was left, and the Pandavas took over. The Pandavas moved into the palace because it was the royal palace, and now Yudhisthira was going to rule from the royal palace. So Dhritarashtra, if he had had something like the same consciousness as Vidura, he could have taken it that, well, you know, I've been kicked out, I was the king, and now Yudhisthira's the king, and, you know, they've totally taken over, we've totally lost everything. He could have thought, well, let me follow in the footsteps of my brother Vidura, but he couldn't do it at all. He was not able to do it. He just clung on for dear life. He had to stay in the palace, in the same quarters. Even previously, he would sit on the main throne. There were a number of thrones. He would sit on the main throne, and Yudhisthira, now the king, allowed him to continue sitting on the same throne and would address him, O king. But Dhritarashtra, and he must have known, he should have known, he was definitely not the king. He was definitely not ruling. And he definitely didn't have that power at all. So it was really an embarrassment for him. Terrible embarrassment. But he didn't see it like that. He just hung on. And when people would address him, O king, he would respond, yes. not like, you know, you're not addressing me, are you? So, see the difference in consciousness. Yes, what a difference in consciousness. So as Prabhupada says, on the part of Maharaj Yudhisthira, there was nothing wrong with maintaining his uncle, who had lost all his sons, and just lost everything. There's nothing wrong with continuing to maintain him in a decent way. But for Dhritarashtra to continue accepting it, it's just too mortifying to a cultured person. They would just feel that, I cannot do this. It's too much out of place, and I'm going to make just a terrible fool of myself. So he could have left and somehow located Vidura out in the forest at some holy place and gone with his brother. It would have been very nice, but he couldn't do it. And when Vidura came back, it was not in any way that, yes, now they kicked me out before, but now I'm going to stay here in comfort. He came just to preach to Dhritarashtra. So then another very interesting point which comes up right at the end of the purport is that Vidura, well, has he started preaching yet? Not yet. Yeah, okay. He's just about to, yeah. And he is going to preach, as was said of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the chopping technique. Oh. Cutting. Bang. Not just like, well, look, you know, you're getting quite old. I know a nice place in the forest. You could just take it easy and not be under the pressures of the palace. He just told him, listen, you're just like an old dog. In fact, he literally said that, among many other very strong things. So, it's all intended for Dhritarashtra. And actually it worked, as we'll see. The chapter is titled Dhritarashtra Quits Home, and he does. Yeah, Vidura's preaching is successful. And Dhritarashtra just goes with his wife, eventually. But Prabhupada makes the point that any talks of spiritual enlightenment are so refreshing, they're so enlivening for everyone and anyone, that even though Vidura was preaching to Dhritarashtra and preaching in a very specific way, but everyone else, the Pandavas and their family members and the other like ministers and other people who were part of the ruling group, they all gathered, and they were all relishing it. And they were not sitting there thinking, ha, look at him, he's getting chastised, ha, ha, ha. Mm. No, they were relishing the nectar transcendental discussions on transcendental subject matters and pointing out what's wrong with material life and how we must not be attached to material life, being presented very dramatically. And every one of them was relishing it. This is nectar. Because that's the nature of transcendental discussions. It's all nectar. It's just nectar. And even words like this, you know, what to speak of Radha Krishna Leela being nectar? Of course it is. Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, it's nectar. Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, it's nectar. What to speak of those things being nectar? But even heavy chastisement, you're living like a dog, when presented by the appropriate person and presented with that depth of spiritual potency behind it, it's also nectar. It's just nectar. And the Pandavas were not, you know, putting their hand up and saying, listen, you know, that's enough of the heavy stuff. Could you tell us some of Radha and Krishna's pastimes? No, they were just relishing the nectar. It was amazing. Prabhupada says that Vidura attracted the attention of all the members of the family, and all of them took pleasure in hearing him patiently. That is the way of spiritual realization. The message should be heard attentively. And if it's spoken with realization by an advanced devotee like Vidura, then it acts on the heart. Any heart, and particularly those who are really listening attentively in a very humble, submissive mode, it really acts very strongly. So they all came out of that. You know, Dhritarashtra came out of it a changed man. It's more or less like a 180-degree turnaround. From just pathetic attachment to total detachment on the spot. But everyone came out thinking, that was nectar. We really got some mercy today. This is the nature of transcendental discussion. It's all nectar. Not just, you know, some things are elementary, but some other things are nectar. And the elementary things, well, they're for the elementary people. But we are, you know, more advanced now, so we want the more nectarian things. Not like that. So if we hear like that, submissively, to any transcendental subject matter, then if one hears like that, one can attain the perfect stage of self-realization. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any comment or question? Oh, yes, sir. No, it's okay, go ahead.
It's not only to the devotees that we must be respectful, but to the people outside as well too.
Yes.
I don't know if Maharaj has heard this before. I can't remember who said it. There was a lady coming down here from Chatsworth's shopping mall. She met a devotee going up that way, and she started speaking to the devotee, and the lady said, the devotee, so almost immediately said, I don't want to have anything to do with the devotees. Yeah. So the devotee was quite surprised. She said, why? She said, no, who is this person who come up to me and tell me no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, and unstoppable worship of these demigods. He said, how can you just come? I don't want to come to your temple, thank you. It was quite a shock for me when I heard that it was wrong to. So we have to be careful, even the public, not just the
sure. Well, we mentioned about Shivananda Sen and the dog, and devotee is respectful even to an ant. Better to be an ant in the house of a devotee than to be a Lord Brahma who's not a devotee. So yes, we well, don't preach like Vidura did to Dhritarashtra to just some person on the street. Different mode of presentation to really get their attention and get them to digest it and be open to it.
And my question, please?
Yes, please.
How does an individual devotee react to others around him that are impersonal? Should he make them, should he give them a hint that they're impersonal, or should he?
You mean other devotees who they're staying with?
You know, like if you're sitting somewhere, somebody just walks right past you.
Like a devotee?
They don't even turn their head to you.
A devotee?
Now, should that devotee, should he just be aloof of it, or?
You're talking about the other person's a devotee, or just?
Yeah, yeah, I'm talking about devotees, devotees. Should he hint to that devotee, probably, you know?
Well, no, I think you should just treat them very nicely. Mm. Hare Krishna, nice to see you.
Because I've got a terrible habit. You know what I do, Maharaj? I say, oh, Hare Krishna, Mala Mangal, how are you? Oh, I'm fine.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't do that.
No, no, that's why I'm bringing it out in the open, you know.
Just be nice to them.
Yeah, no,
and then they'll,
I have a habit
be nice to you.
My terrible habit.
That's a slightly aggressive approach.
Thank you for bringing that out in me. Now I won't do it again.
Don't be sarcastic. Just be nice.
Whoever in this room that I've been sarcastic to, please, in front of Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada, I'll never do it again, I promise you. I promise you.
Okay.
I promise you.
And if we hear another report. Any other comment or question? Yes.
Maharaj, from this last time that you were talking about the dog,
right.
It just seems that devotees have them, or transcendentalist devotees have them, a different value system to ordinary people. What's right and what's wrong is how we measure what is right and what's wrong.
Yes.
Is different. So how do we, sometimes we see that, for instance, devotees might commit sinful activities and just act like ordinary people. How do we sort of avoid seeing devotees as ordinary people?
Just any time, or if they do something bad?
Especially when they do something bad. I guess we tend to just sort of think, oh, they're worse than people out there. Or,
no, well, we shouldn't. We should remember Bhagavad Gita chapter 9 verse 30. Apiched sudaracharo bhajate mamananyabak sadoreva samantavya samyagvyava satohisa. Should remember that verse, that even if a devotee commits abominable activity, he must be considered saintly because he's properly situated in his determination. As long as they are properly situated in their determination, and as long as they have not just fallen down into a whole program of degraded activity. If they've fallen into a whole program of degraded activity and kind of left Krishna consciousness behind, then we should try to be kind to them. Merciful would be the correct mood. But if they just had some, like on one occasion, somehow due to some circumstances, they made even a very bad mistake, But now you can see they're fixed in their determination. They're seriously trying to recover themselves and seriously trying to be Krishna conscious. Then we should respect them on the basis of that verse. So we should remember that verse. It's a very important verse. And the following verse, he quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. Declare it boldly, my devotee never perishes. So we have, you know, we have to be somewhat Shastric actually. Because in Shastra, there are descriptions and there are verses covering practically every type of situation you'll encounter. Good and bad. And if you're Shastric enough, then in practically any situation you can remember, you know, this is the appropriate thing. I read about this. Is that okay? Hari Bol.
Yeah? Another question. You mentioned how it's a matter of consciousness. If you were in an advanced state of consciousness, you could travel across the universe. So, from my understanding, currently, everything we do is controlled by the demigods. Like, even if you blink, everything we do.
Yeah.
So, someone like that, would they be beyond the control of the demigods, or would it still be by the power of the demigods that they could be able to do this type of thing?
Well, it could be by the power of the demigods who are acting under Krishna's supervision. Yeah. Could even be directly by the potency of Krishna, but it could be by the potency of a demigod who understands the will of Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.